Yud Gimel Adar Rishon, Monday the 22nd of February, Rabbi Nechemia Gottlieb, Rules of Engagement in Chinuch. Clearly a
discuss today some practical ideas in chinuch. I've been in chinuch for many, many years, and I find myself over and over again in situations with parents giving these bits and pieces of advice. I hope they will serve you well. The first question we need to ask ourselves is, why is this permissible? Why is it that when it comes to chinuch, we feel that we can just use practical advice? I mean, chinuch is a mitzvah. And mitzvahs have halachas and gedorim, and they're defined by chazal and by our makaris. And of course, if Torah-dika people are giving chinuch advice, it's not going to be out of sync with Torah. But why is it that we are allowed to actually just take something practical and apply it? And the answer is that there are really, when it comes to mitzvahs chinuch, there are really two parts to mitzvahs chinuch. Chinuch, as we know, is the concept of initiation, of starting something in a way which will allow that thing to continue as we move along, like Chanukah Samizbeach and so on and so forth. And part of chinuch, which is the fact that the Rabbanon were, we'll get into the lumdus here of who's chayiv and who's not chayiv, but anyway, the father has a mitzvah to have his child do mitzvahs derabbanon. That is chinuch kipshuta, that is initiation. So a child will take the lulav, and he does that when he's a young child, so that when he grows older, he will continue to take the lulav when it's a mitzvah deraisa. There's another part of chinuch. The other part of chinuch is creating the environment and incentives and so on and so forth, which will make your child grow up into being a tayridiki yid. And that other second part of chinuch, which is a much less formal part of chinuch, that part of chinuch is governed, or at least advised, by the pasuk of chanoich lanar al pi darkoi. Chanoich lanar al pi darkoi. So the pasuk in Mishlei already told us that there's something called al pi darkoi. And the Torah left it because it can't be clearly defined. It's not something which has a formal set of rules. This is something which has to go according to the child. So here the Torah gave us the license, or the Torah has told us that we must look at the child and use our understanding of the child in order to craft the type of chinuch that we're going to be giving to the child. And it's not our discussion today, but in fact, sometimes, as we all know from practical experience, sometimes these two things come into conflict. Sometimes the best way that I can be mechanech my child to daven is to send him out of shul, because right now he's disturbing. So here we would have something where the formal mitzvah would tell me that I should be having him do a certain mitzvah, and the more broader definition of chinuch would tell me that I should abstain from that. And very often we will find ourselves in such a situation. I'm reminded of, and I don't remember, maybe somebody here in the audience can supply the details, but I read once. Maybe it was true in many different professions, but I read once about a type of an apprenticeship in a certain profession, and one of the things which was remarkable about it, that it took a long time before the master would even allow the apprentice to touch the tools or to actually start hands-on. No, first you have to learn, and you have to study, and you have to do certain things. It was by not allowing him to touch the tools for a long time until he was actually ready and he had all the skills and all the understandings, that the first time he picked up the tool, he should pick it up, you know, in the proper way. He should hold it properly. He should wield it properly, so on and so forth. That was part of the chinuch. Now, as I said, I want to share with you some practical ideas about chinuch, more in the vein of chanoich lanar pidarke. Now, one of the things which I think we often lack clarity on, we have a lot of interactions with our kids, an enormous amount. A lot of them are good, some of them are not so good, whatever it is, you know, we're human beings, we have an enormous amount of interactions, and sometimes I think we lack clarity on what is chinuch and what is not. And this is especially in the area of things which we need our children to do for practical purposes. So there are a lot of things which we need just in order to run the house. Either the child needs to run their own affairs, or the child needs to help. You know, we don't have, most of us, we don't have servants and so on and so forth. So there's chores and there are different things which need to get taken care of. And we very often, we term this broadly as chinuch, and we tell ourselves, and maybe even sometimes tell our children, that it is important to teach our children to do these things so that when they grow up, they will continue to do these things. And very often they're not. And as a matter of fact, by having this lack of clarity, we create interference with ourselves. So I'll give you a few examples of this. Let's take, for example, the idea of teaching children to clean up after themselves. Let's talk about picking up the toys in the playroom. So let me tell you what happens in most households. In most households, there's a rule that if you played with the game, you have to pick it up. And most children do not pick it up. And the playroom turns into a mess. And in the end, when your wife gets desperate, she cleans it up all by herself. Now, what happened here? What happened here is that we do not really need our children to clean up the playroom in order to be mechanech them that when they grow up and they play with their toys, it's just a smartphone anyway, right? No, not a lot of cleaning up there. But in order to be mechanech them that when they grow up, they should actually clean after themselves. No, this is a chore. The house needs to be clean. Mommy is not your servant. You took out a game. By all rights, you should clean up the game. But because that's really my tachlis, the real reason why I want them to clean up the playroom is that the playroom should be clean. At some point, it's not worth my energy to fight with them and hassle them and allow them to go to sleep 15 minutes after their bedtime when they're supposed to be upstairs already and so on and so forth. And now we're going to start with cleaning the playroom and the fights between the brother and the sister and you took out and she took out and everything else. It's just not worth it. So I end up cleaning it up myself. So that was not about chinuch. As a matter of fact, if you want to be mechanech your children to clean up the playroom, here might be a great idea. Don't pick up the toys ever. Let them step on them, break them, lose them, and maybe 6 weeks down the road, they'll learn that it's worthwhile to pick up the toys after themselves. So when I need the playroom clean, that is not the time to be mechanech and to clean the playroom, because those two things conflict. If you want to teach your kid to fold his pajamas and put it under the pillow, the worst time to do that is before he leaves for school. Everybody's under pressure. He's got to make the ride. He's got to make the bus. He's got to get out of the door. The house is bedlam. Now is not the time to do it. Let the pajamas stay unfolded. I mean, if your wife can take it. But let the pajamas stay unfolded. First things first, when he comes home from school, tatala, before we do anything else, before the milk and cookies, if that's still a tradition in your house, or whatever it is before you go to play, you must go upstairs and fold your pajamas and put them under the pillow. That's a great time to do chinuch. That's the time when you have, you know, when you have the patience and so on and so forth in order to make that happen. So this is very, very important, and of course, it's perfectly permissible to give your children chores and to make them do chores and to have them do things with no chinuch considerations at all. They're members of the household and they have to pitch in. But just let's be clear on what we're doing. And just as an aside, we do expend an enormous amount of chinuch capital, quote unquote, on things which don't really need so much chinuch. So many parents are busy with their children from age 6 through age who knows what with table manners. Because in theory, if you fight with your child not to eat with their fingers, and when they're 6-year-old through when they're 14-year-old, in theory, as adults, they will use a fork and knife much more. And that's I don't know if that's been scientifically proven. It could be that those that you have to fight with for all those years never pick it up. And B, it would make a lot more sense instead of starting at age 6 when the kid's 14 years old. Say, listen, do you know that if you eat like that, it's disgusting? Do you know that people look down on you? Do you know that when you turn around, people are making faces at you? And then the child's so socially conscious because they're a teenager. You know, you could do one or two schmoozing like that. You could have done it. What's the answer? The answer is this. It's not aesthetically pleasing to me, and especially when I have guests at my home, to have my child eat with their fingers. So once again, it has nothing to do with chinuch. It has to do with the way I want my child to present themselves. And that's, by the way, again, that's fine. If that's the decision that you make, you're a parent, and you also deserve to be pleased and not offended by your child's aesthetics. But let's not confuse that with chinuch. Another thing we have to remember when it comes to chinuch is that there is what we'll call the open, formal tachlis of the chinuch, and then there's an underlying tachlis in the chinuch. And what I mean to say, for example, we'll give an example which is easy to understand. A woman may make supper for her husband. Well, the open, formal purpose of that is to give the man something to eat. But there's a deeper underlying reason why that is a convention. It's because this is something which a woman does for her husband. It displays her love. The husband displays his appreciation. It's a time when after the, you know, people come back from a day's work, they get time to sit down and speak together in a good setting and so on and so forth. There's a lot going on over there, besides for what is the open interaction that we're having. And the same thing is true with our children. Every time we tell our child to do something and they say yes, and they do it, then our child is now bending to our will. Our child, it has to do with kibud av v'eim, it has to do with our role as mechanchim and so on and so forth. That is a positive interaction. Every time the child says no, that is a negative interaction. We lost some of our authority. And sometimes in certain situations, if you are blessed with kids who are by nature angels and they listen to you in general, then you don't have to employ these type of tactics. But for those who have more challenging children, aside from chinuch, in the situations where you need to be mechanechim, aside from the chores or doing the things which you need them to do because you need the house to run properly, you might create situations in which the child can say yes, in which the child can bend to your will. And it's not a good time to engage in that when you need to do chinuch. It's not a good time to engage in that when you need something to happen. Again, those two times you have big things at stake. Here would be something which you would pick in order to make it happen. So I'll give you an example. I was in chinuch for many, many, many years. And I found myself often walking into a classroom to substitute or walking into a classroom as a guest. So very often I would walk into a classroom and look around and let's say see a little piece of paper on the floor and tell one of the children, please pick up that paper and put it in the wastebasket. I had no interest in the floor being clean. But at that moment, I declared who's master. If he actually got up and picked up that piece of paper and put it in the wastebasket, everybody saw that I'm the boss. Teeny thing. There's no reason he should say no. He's not going to fight me on that. If the first interaction I had with the child was to tell him, stop talking, whoa, all bets are off. Maybe he will, maybe he won't, because he's got a lot invested in talking. So that would have been a tachlis, which I need to attain. That wouldn't be a good place to try to see who's the boss. So I'll take something which is inconsequential to me and to him, and I'll put it to test over there. And then if he got up and he did it, now we all know who's in charge of this classroom, and then we can go on to bigger and better things. Keeping that in mind, a mistake which we so often make when we engage in battles with our children is to keep a running tally of how many times the child said yes and how many times the child said no. So the classic example is the child gets up in the morning and says, Mommy, I'm not going to school. I hate my Rebbe, I hate my Mora, whatever, you know, fill in the blanks, okay? I'm not going to school. Yes, you are. No, I'm not. Yes, you are. No, I'm not. The struggle, put on the pants, put on the this, put on the that, whatever. 15, 20 minutes later, huffing and puffing as the ride is, you know, they're honking on the horn outside and whatever, and you gotta go. You somehow haul the kid and shove him into the car, and he goes off and you say, whew, you know, I won. No, you didn't. Every time the child said no, he won. The child had 30 victories, and you had one. And guess what? That's no great victory. What, you got your child to go to school? I mean, that should be push it. Of course, kids have to go to school, and they have to listen to us when we tell them to go to school. So that was your big victory, that the child ended up doing what the child inevitably has to do, and he got to tell you 30 times no in the interim. So we have to keep that in mind, and maybe if we have time, we'll come back a little bit later to how to negotiate situations like that. But let's remember that. And because of that, because when a child says yes or a child says no is so important and so crucial, and it sets the tone every time, again, every time the child listens, it's reinforcing the fact that he has to listen. And we need a lot of that capital, because as they grow up, there are big issues. There are big, big issues. We need them to say yes. Those could be issues which could change their lives. They could change, you know, where they're going to yeshiva, or who they're marrying, or what type of profession they're going to have, or so on and so forth. They're big issues. So the more we build that up, the more we exercise those yes muscles, the better off we are. And because of that, we should really stop and think and choose our battles wisely. Stop and think before you tell your child to do something. Stop and think if it's important. And stop and think also how likely it is that the child is going to do it. Stop and think if this is the right time and place to pick that battle. Let's stop and think a lot how to get those immediate yeses. How to get the child to say yes. Now, I want to say as an aside, we're allowed to be ourselves. We're allowed to tell our kids to do little things just because we feel like it. Not huge things, we shouldn't be capricious in that way. Yeah, but this is what I feel like right now, this is what I want, just be quiet. Why be quiet? Because, well, I don't know, I want to read the newspaper, or get out of the room. You know, he's making a racket, or so on and so forth. That's fine. We're people, we're humans, we're not chinuch machines, and we happen to be the masters of our house, you know, we own our houses, and our kids, you know, they have to be in a certain position, which is not a position of equality with us. I'm just saying that should be the miut. That's a little bit of what we do. But in general, we should try to be thought out and do things, you know, figure out what the purpose is of what we're doing, and, you know, have the right strategy to make that happen. And I want to tell you something similar to what I said just now. It's not the same, but it's such an important idea in and of itself that I want to share it with you. As we know, the default chinuch enforcement strategy a number of years ago was Petsch, good old Petsch. And I want to tell you, and I don't know if I'm going to make myself popular with this audience by saying that, there's a lot of good in physical Petsch. As a matter of fact, if the environment supported it, it's the best form of chinuch that there is. It's clean, it's swift, it doesn't leave anything for argument, and it works. The problem is that the environment doesn't support it, and the kids don't accept it properly, and they feel that we don't have a right to do it, and once they feel that we don't have a right to do it, then we really don't have a right to do it, because after it's lost its legitimacy, and unfortunately, we now have to be mechanic with ways which are less effectual and more damaging. Like using our mouth instead of our hand, which is really damaging. It just doesn't leave scars, and it can't be proven in a court of law. So that's where we are now. One of the people who was famous, one of the Gedolei Olam, who was famous for bringing in this shift in our tzibur, the shift away from physical punishment, was Rav Volbe Zatzal, who famously said that, you know, this is not a good mode of chinuch, for our generation. But I invite you to take a look in Zriyo Binyan B'chinuch, where Rav Volbe says, he didn't actually write it, his Talmud wrote it, but it was Lamari Einov, and he says there, and I didn't have it in front of me to tell you the exact page, but it's not such a huge sefer, maybe you could do Chazara on the sefer and find it there. Anyway, in Zriyo Binyan B'chinuch, Rav Volbe says, I'm not talking about the patch when a mother is at her wit's end at the end of the day and the kids aren't getting into the bed and she gives them a patch. That's fine. You hear that? Rav Volbe, the big Baal Musar. Yeah, she's at her wit's end and she gave the kids a patch. No big deal. He's talking about the fact that when people, like we said, you have a tachlis, you want your child to do something and you're investing time and energy in figuring out how to make them do that. And so you know how I'm going to make them do that? I'm going to give the kid a smack. No, that doesn't work. That doesn't work in our generation. But when you read that, let's give ourselves some space. We're humans being, maybe human beings. Maybe we lost it once in a while with our kids. Maybe we did something. Big deal. Move on. As an aside, and this is really, we're talking about chinuch, but Chazal do say, Yetzer tinoik v'isha, smol doichem min mekareves. Chazal, to a certain extent, liken our relationships with our spouses to our relationship with our children. Just as an aside, and we're talking here about what I'll call subjectivity in chinuch, or not even chinuch, our interactions with our children. The fact that, you know, we're people and we're allowed to express our preferences or our desires to them, even if it has no chinuch meaning at all. This is a very important klal, very, very useful for husbands and for wives in shalom bayis, and it works like this. When we want something from our spouse, Very often, the way that we will frame that is by talking to them about some absolute truth. This is the right way to do it. This is the MS. This is the way it's supposed to be done. This is what makes sense, and so on and so forth. And we do that because we feel that if I talk about what I would prefer, and I make no claims about what's right and what's wrong, I feel vulnerable, I feel needy, I feel like maybe they're going to challenge me because if this is what you want, well, guess what, I want something different. So I frame it as some type of eternal philosophical truth, which is supposed to be self-evident, as a matter of fact. By framing something as a truth, you are putting the other person under attack. So if I don't do this, then I'm not okay. Then this is not the truth. And if I didn't figure this out by myself, then maybe I'm stupid or something like that. And I have a very small likelihood of the other person agreeing. When I come to a person and, yes, indeed, and we're talking about people who enjoy a normal level of shalom bayis, yes, indeed, I make myself vulnerable. And I frame it as a request. Oh, this is what you want? You're asking me for a taiva? Who wouldn't do a taiva for the spouse? So move away from talking about what's right and what's wrong and say, could you do me a favor? Would you mind doing this for me? And you'll find you have a lot more hatzlacha. We mentioned before that the time at which we decide to be mechanech children is important. And there's a lot of different aspects to timing. One of the aspects of timing is this. The best time to be mechanech on any issue, this goes for shalom bayis as well, but the best time to be mechanech on any issue is lifnei hamaisa or la'achar hamaisa. Not b'shas maisa. And I'll explain to you. First of all, I want to tell you, my father is a chassid of the Boston Rebbe Zatzal, and even though I've strayed from the path, but I got an enormous amount from the Boston Rebbe, and I grew up in his home to a certain extent. I used to go there for Yom Tovim. And I remember that he told us what, he said that his father was a very big tzaddik, a very derogatory yid, and a big talmud chacham. He said his father had a minhag like this. His father had a minhag that whenever they needed to get punished, no matter what it was, the children were doing something, and the mother used to tell his father whatever it was, he had a certain time when he addressed that. If my memory serves me correctly, it was in the morning after Shacharis. The next morning, no matter what it was, he would say, come to see me the next morning after Shacharis. The next morning after Shacharis, either he would punish them, or he wouldn't punish them, or he would lecture them, he would decide what to do. But not in the, you know, in the heat of things. That's not always the best time for us and for them to engage in punishment. And in truth, this hanhaga which he had might have been based on a pasuk in Mishlei. There's a pasuk in Mishlei which says, "Gedol chema neisei oynesh kim tatzu v'yteisif." And based on what the Goyin says in the Bir Agroah, the Goyin adds on a few things, but part of what the Goyin says is that Gedol Chema, if you find yourself very, very angry with your child, so, they say Einish, take off the Einish. Don't punish your child at that time. But Ki Im Tatzil V'Oy Taisif. I'm not sure what the Goyin says exactly this, but similar to what the Goyin is saying for sure, is that it's fine. Later on, address this issue by Taisif and give more anshim. That's fine, but not pshas maisim. Not when you're incensed. Not when you're so angry. So this is an important concept. But beyond this, much broader than this. But besides the fact that when we are angry and we are upset, especially if a child did something publicly, something which embarrassed us or so on and so forth, whatever, it's not the best time for us to address the issue. But when it comes to the child, and again, this is true for other interpersonal relationships as well, when a person is doing something, b'shas ma'aseh, they're very emotionally involved. Every negiah that they have tells them to discount whatever it is. If I tell a person, you're wrong for what you're doing right now, you have to be close to a malach to admit to that. Every fiber in my body and in my brain is trying to figure out excuses and reasons, and even if you're right, you didn't have a right to tell it to me, or you shouldn't have told it to me like this, and then I can emotionally discount what you told me, even if I can't discount what you told me, but if I have some reason why you shouldn't have been telling it to me like this, then I can dispense with your criticism. Like the Chazal say, who could give the Chacham b'Dereinu to Kisam, to Kairov? What tokisim tokerim? The person says you have a fault. You say, well, you have a bigger fault. So what? I'm trying to improve you. I'm trying to help you. You go to the doctor, and he gives you medication because you have pre-diabetes. You say to the doctor, well, you're a full-fledged diabetic. So what are you busy giving medicine for? Right? So, but of course that's irrelevant. But emotionally, that's the way which we shrug it off. So, what do we want to do? We want to do either shalevish before the maisa. Tell your child. Tatala, mamala, we're about to go into a certain situation. This is the way that I would appreciate if you behave in this situation. A day before, or 2 days before, or 5 minutes before, or whatever it is, before they have a well-formed idea in their mind of what they want to do, before they even anticipate it, you anticipate it by saying that, you're not attacking them, and you have a very good chance that they're going to go ahead and do what you want. Or, la'achar ha'maisa. A while later, a few days later, they're not emotionally involved anymore. At the right time, at the right place, you're sitting, you're having a conversation with them, you know, about something. It's a good environment. You say, you know that thing that happened 3 days ago? Like, let's think together. Could you have done it a different way? Would there have been a different way to do it that would have had a better outcome or something like that? It's much more likely that they will accept it. It also, somehow counterintuitively, makes a much bigger ratio on them than Shalei B'Shas Maisa, you feel it, and you're coughing, and you have a lot to say, and you feel it's going to make a big ratio. But for them, if this is something which wasn't triggered by something that's happening, if you subconsciously, they realize, if you're thinking 3 days ahead, or you're thinking 3 days behind, obviously you attach enormous importance to this. And it will make a bigger ratio with them. And I want to tell you the same thing is true about praise. If your child did something, your spouse, and you remember 3 days later, you come back and you say, you know that thing that you did, you can say, for sure say it, b'shas maisa, but if you come back and say, you know that thing, that really made me so proud, or I'm still thinking about that, I'm still, you know, so on and so forth, that makes a huge, huge, huge roshem on the person. And somewhat in this vein, and I see that we have to be makatzer a little bit, but somewhat in this vein also, when we're talking about whether people can accept or not accept, I find that very often when we are giving mussar to our children, I find that more is less, and less is more. If you have 5 minutes of mussar to give a child about something, how's he supposed to accept that? He did something so bad? It's so terrible? I mean, we're really trying to explain to them how terrible it is. So what type of a Russia am I if I did that? Very little. More is less. Less is more. Just say it. Give them the 15 seconds. Just tell them, this was not good what you did. That's it. Finished. Okay? Maybe if you say it like that, maybe they can accept it. The more heavy it is, the less likelihood they have. Like, you know what he's thinking when you're saying that? Just think, just shut up already. Just get at it. Right? That's what he's thinking to himself. He can't take it. You think he's being makabel? They're not being makabel. And when we do that, we appear sometimes to our children either desperate. Sometimes we appear desperate like we have to do that, and that's not good. Because if we're desperate, then they have yadam el elyona, they're in control. And sometimes we appear, and we don't only appear, sometimes we're doing it because we're not so sure of ourselves. We're not so confident of ourselves. And we're doing it in order to convince ourselves. And that's also not a good position to be in when we're trying to do chinuch. And besides, when you tell somebody something b'derech remez, and you don't spell it out, and then they believe that they thought the thing through themselves, then it's their maskonas. It's the ideas which they developed. It's their concepts. People are much more native to accept things which they thought of than things that you thought of. I just want to finish off here with a maisa which I heard about the stipler, and I'm sure you've heard many, many times. We've all heard, and we practice this, that after all the Eitzes and Chinuch and all our best efforts and so on and so forth, we really need a lot of tefillah, a lot of siyata d'shmaya. It's in the hands of the Rabbeinu Shlalom. And I heard from a Yid, his name is Rav Diamant. And this Rav Diamant, who's a friend of mine, heard this from his brother. His brother was the one who heard it from the stipler. So I heard it from him. His brother heard this from the stipler. He was by the stipler. And he asked the stipler what to do that he should have gutte kinder. And the stipler said these words to him. Medaf mispalel zayin. And he said, Was meinst du? Ich daven noch jetzt jeden Tag as mein Chaimel soll sein an ehrlicher Yid. That's it. He davens every day that Chaimel should be an ehrlicher Yid. So, Rabbi said, let's daven for our kinder, let's daven they should be ehrlicher Yidin, let's daven for more than that, and we should be zeichah.